This episode of the Death by Birding podcast is brought to you by Nox Provisions. Nox are a binocular brand making a difference. They have plastic-free packaging without dyes or glue, totally recyclable. They have a range of colors and models available to satisfy everyone from beginners to advanced birders. I've been personally using my Pro Issue 10x42s for a few weeks now, and I love them. If you've seen me out birding, I've no doubt spoken to you about these binoculars. Edge-to-edge clarity and a close focus of less than 2 meters, which I adore. They are incredibly durable, fully waterproof, fog-proof, and perfect for every adventure. Not only that, but they have a lifetime warranty, a 30-day no-questions-asked return policy, and free shipping on orders over $85. Now, this is for Australian listeners only, but if you go to noxprovisions.com.au, so that's N-O-C-S, provisions.com.au and enter the offer code hashtag death by birding one word, you will receive an extra 15% off your binoculars. That's hashtag death by birding one word for 15% off. That's the symbol hash, not actually the word hashtag, just the symbol hash death by birding. What have you got to lose? Anyway, happy birding, nerds. The Death by Birding podcast is recorded on Jinniburra land. We acknowledge the traditional ownership of all Indigenous peoples across Australia and recognise that sovereignty was never ceded. The traditional custodians of these mountains have been watching birds for thousands and thousands of years. Hey, folks. Before we get into this one today, I just wanted to check in and let you know that this one is a tiny bit different to the regular format that you know and love. Big assumption on my behalf, but no, that's because for a couple of reasons. Number one is that I have two guests on, which you'll find out about in a moment, but also, I've only got two mics, so Dan Terrington and I had to share, and we got very close at several points. Kind of just changed the dynamic a bit. I didn't have my own mic the whole time, but it was great. Like, it was a very fun conversation, which leads me to the point of what I'm saying is that we go into some topics, some drama topics. Yeah. So basically, we're talking about some of the idiosyncrasies, some of the controversies within the birding community. And as such, I just wanted to start by saying that any information that we're sharing today is kind of available online. It's nothing that we're making up. We're hopefully not discrediting anyone or slandering anybody, as that is certainly not our intention. We do name several people, but again, all the information that we say is readily available. And anything that we do say is purely speculative. We don't really know what we're talking about, as usual. And yeah, at no point are we trying to defame or discredit anybody for the things that we talk about in this podcast. I hope I've covered that. But of course, as always, if we do get things wrong, just send me a message, let me know. I'm always keen. I don't necessarily want to be the disseminator of false information, as I often perhaps am. I don't know. But again, I've always said that I'm not an authority in the birdwatching community, and anyone that listens to me does so at their own risk. But yes, murky, murky waters indeed. Anyway, my two guests are comedian Meg Yeager and ornithologist and good friend of mine, Dan Terrington, who I've nicknamed Gossip Gull for reasons that'll be very clear to those that know him and very clear to those that listen to the whole episode, despite this intro. But yeah, as a bit of a treat, I've managed to track down and hire Hollywood sensation and original voiceover actress for the intro of Gossip Girl, Sarah Jessica Parker. Yeah, can you believe it? It's definitely not me just putting on a voice. And so I hope you enjoy this episode. Yes, please welcome Sarah Jessica Parker, I guess. A little birdie told me that while 10K is a big number, it's a lot easier to add a few of your own. And as the Icarus list grows, be careful of the heat. As they say, you can't paint a horse and call it a zebra, much like you can't paint a fig parrot and call it a new species. Nor can you shave your head to shave a little off your reputation. The sun is getting closer now, and those sunglasses are looking a little worse for wear. And while some birds don't fly at all, emu eggs may be more serendipitous than they appear, and perhaps it's not worth counting all your eggs before they've hatched. One might ask, how long is a piece of string? But what we all really want to know is how long is the list of stringers? XOXO, Gossip Gull.
I'm glad that my podcast is just a joke. I was so proud when I thought of that intro. I was like, oh man, this is good stuff. I'm too cheap.
Was I meant to sit here, by the way?
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I think so. Well, just because, like, you know, Dan and I can hold hands this way as well.
Oh, that's nice.
All right. Do you know what you're getting yourself into?
No, but okay. That's okay.
Okay, good. It's a weird way to introduce someone to bird watching. So, but yeah, we're going to share a little mic. Is this okay?
Yeah, yeah. Do you want me to get in a bit closer?
I never have to do an intro. But I've already, so just to let you know, before this, I'm going to be recording like a monologue at the beginning in the style of Gossip Girl.
Cool.
But then sign it off like XOXO, Gossip Girl.
Yeah, that's funny.
Because that's my nickname for Dan.
Oh, is it? That's sweet.
Well, well, welcome to the Death by Birding podcast. I'm your host, Cesar Pushmarin, and this week I am joined by two very lovely guests. My first guest is stand-up comedian Meg Yeager.
Woo!
Yes.
That's where the crowd would applaud if we were doing this live, like how I'd wanted to do it. And my second guest, you may have heard of him, ornithologist Dan Tarrington. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Sean Dooley once said while describing bird watchers that your reputation is like your virginity, in that you can only lose it once. However, I think your reputation is more like a podcast, in that everyone has one, and if it's bad, your friends and family lose respect for you. True?
Yes.
Everyone's got a podcast. And I say you don't have a podcast?
No, I would like one, but...
What would your podcast be about?
It would be, I'm thinking of doing a podcast with comedian Frankie Rose Thorne. Do you know her?
I've heard the name, yeah.
Yeah, she's actually Brett from Kath and Kim's daughter.
Oh, cool.
But she's, talented in her own right. She's a Triple J host, and I haven't listened to any new music in like 5 years. So like when we listened to the Hottest 100 this year together, I was like, what the hell is this? Like I thought Doja Cat and Dua Lipa were the same person. And I'm a history teacher, and there's so much – when I say things like – oh, like, I've got Vietnam flashbacks. She's like, have you been to Vietnam? And like, there are things that she doesn't get. So we would want to do a podcast, and it would be called Realizing Stuff, Realizing Things, over that that clip of Kendall Jenner talking to her sister Kylie Jenner, being like, you just need to realize things and realize stuff. And we'd both be realizing things and realizing stuff, me about modern music and her about like basic historical facts.
Nice. And what point would the bird watching segment fit in?
Whole time.
It's all bird watching.
The whole time.
So today's actually the 1 year anniversary of this podcast.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't realize until I was sitting on the toilet this morning and thought, I'm pretty sure I started this about a year ago, and I looked at it, I was like, yep, today.
That's awesome.
Yeah, first one went live a year ago. So we're doing something a little different for this episode, as it is a very special episode. And if you didn't gather from the intro, we are discussing drama within the birdwatching community. Now, Meg.
Yes.
You might be wondering why you're here.
Yes.
Because you're not a birder, is that right?
I'm not a birder, but I like birds.
Do you?
Yeah. Well, like I grew up in Redcliffe, and I used to watch the pelicans on the Hornybrook Bridge shit on people's cars.
No, is it actually called the Hornybrook Bridge?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, there was a girl in my school called Brooke.
Oh, no.
And every time we would like cross the Hornybrook Bridge when we were going to sport or something, we'd be like, oh, Brooke, you're so horny. We laughed.
So, look, I just wanted to bring you in as the outsider's perspective.
Great.
Because originally Dan and I were going to do this by ourselves.
Yeah.
And I thought it would get pretty weird.
It definitely could have gotten particularly weird.
Your nickname by me is Gossip Gull.
Yes, indeed.
You're kind of known for knowing all the goss in the birdwatching community. People come to you for advice.
Yeah, I have a little bit, I think particularly in the last 2 years or so, I've developed something of a reputation.
Wow.
There are a couple of social media accounts that are... I've had people randomly message me and be like, you're running this, right? And of course I always am. So, you know, it's wow. something I'm known for.
Disseminator of gossip. This is great.
I know that that's real because I watched comedian Geraldine Hickey's solo last year, yep. and she's a birder, mm-hmm. and she had a whole bit about there was this rare bird that she found. Well, she found out from another birder, and the other birder was like, don't tell anybody about these birds. And then Geraldine Hickey just could not keep the secret, and she had to go to gigs full of comedians and not birders and be like, I gotta tell somebody.
She was just telling it to the comedians.
Yeah. She's like, I gotta tell you about this rare bird that I'm not allowed to tell the other birders about, because if other birders show up, those birds will disappear.
Have you heard this?
Oh, well, this is, we call it suppression, which is when a bird gets seen by someone and then for whatever reason, sometimes it's valid reasons. Like there are obviously some birds that are very sensitive to disturbance. Mm. So in those cases, you could sort of say it's very valid to, you know, for the protection or the safety of the bird, not to disclose like the location that you've seen something.
Yes.
There are cases that I know of. I can't think of any specific ones off the top of my head, but it's certainly a thing where there are some people who are known for suppressing birds just because they want to kind of keep it to themselves and not really like anything to do with the protection of the bird. So we don't like those.
It's like gatekeeping.
Yeah, it's gatekeeping.
Yeah.
There we go. Are there gatekeepers in the comedy world? Are there like...
For sure. Yes.
Does someone discover like a new joke format and they're like, I'm not going to tell anyone how I figured it out?
There's definitely like people... I think like all information is up for grabs, and I see comedy like... Remember that game 52 Pickup where you just throw a deck of cards and you've got to pick up the most? Like anytime any kind of event happens, every comedian is just trying to like pick up the most stuff. And there have been times where like I remember years ago this guy would do a joke being like, oh, I'm the Olivia Rodrigo of the comedy community. And then like 2 weeks later, a girl did a similar joke having never heard that one. Yeah. And then they had this whole tiff, like, no, I'm the Olivia Rodrigo.
I invented Lemon Tennis.
Yeah. And I was just like, okay, neither of you are either funny enough to claim that title.
This kind of leads into the first bit of drama that I'm that I'm bringing in, you know, the idea of two people coming to a claim. I'm looking at Dan. Firstly, do you know that your last name is a bird?
No.
You've got a bird name.
You're joking.
Yeah, Jaeger is a type of seabird.
A seabird?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love the water.
Do you? There you go.
I genuinely love the water. Yes. That's crazy. Yeah. What does it eat?
Go on, Dan.
Well, funnily enough, so there's a few different species of Jaegers, but one of the things they're famous for is that they're actually kleptoparasites.
I did not plan this.
Kleptoparasitism is when you steal food from other birds. and so, yeah, I don't know if you can relate to that.
To be honest, that is so me. That is literally so me. I'm known for, like, I hate cooking. And so I will, like, sometimes text my friends on, like, a Sunday night. Be like, oh, what are you doing? And then I'll rock up and be like, oh, my God, did you? And I'm known for it. People keep that from me.
Were you the kid at like high school that would always be like, does anyone have $2 for a pizza roundup?
Yes. I never got tuck shop money because my parents were big on like making the food that you eat.
Yeah.
And I would always eat people's crusts because I just thought it was such a waste when they would throw them out. So yeah. I would collect people's crusts.
From them?
From them.
After they'd thrown them. Not after they'd thrown them out.
From them. Yeah. I would just like... I would see they've left it behind in the Glad wrap and I'll be like, are you going to eat that?
That's sick.
Yeah. That's why my hair is so curly.
Yeah, all the crusts. So recently, here's our first bit of bird news, a bit of bird drama. Mm. So how many birds are in the world, like species of birds are in the world, Dan?
It really depends on the taxonomy, but you're sort of talking about...
This is nerdy. This is good stuff, right?
Kind of in the 11,000, 12,000 sort of ballpark. So wow. a lot of birds in the world.
Okay.
So this brings me to Peter Kästner.
Kästner.
So he was a really well-respected birder, right? And towards the end of last year, he announced that he was about to get his 10,000th bird species. which is like 90, more than 90% of the world's bird species.
Like to put that in perspective, you know, of all those birds, there are probably about a quarter of them are like live on just like one island, you know, they're like endemics to a really tiny area. And so to have seen 10,000, to have seen most of the birds in the world, like you not only have to have been essentially all over the world, but even to like random little islands everywhere.
You
like,
have you to have be to, rich.
You have to be very rich.
You have to have a lot of money, right? Like it's what often defines the difference between someone that's able to sort of travel and collect those bird species. But it's not taking away his record. It's still an amazing achievement.
But also, just for comparison, how many birds have you both, species of birds have you both seen?
I've seen under 1,000 in the world. I've seen just close to 600, and you've seen over 1,000.
I've seen about 1,300. So,
wow.
Yeah,
and you've done a lot of travel. You've done Southeast Asia, like so.
Yeah. So I actually saw my 1,000th bird last year in December. So that was Saris Crane. I saw that in northern Queensland, and then I spent January in Thailand. So I spent a lot of time seeing a whole bunch more birds, but like that was a month of birding, and you know, I've still got nowhere close to anything like 10,000.
Do you guys have like a catalog? You have to keep a catalog of all the birds you've seen.
Do you want
to
see something hilarious?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to see my Excel spreadsheet?
Yes.
Yeah. So like
sometimes I check this like several times a week as though it's changed, even though I haven't seen it. I'll be like, I just want to go have a look at the list.
Yeah.
This is my spreadsheet of the birds that I've seen, and I've listed into world, Australia, owls, woodpeckers, Costa Rica, which is blank because I leave in 10 days.
Oh, cool.
UK, Thailand, France, USA, and then, yeah, and then there's little numbers next to the birds that I've seen.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like Pokemon, but real life.
It is like Pokemon.
And you don't get them to fight each other.
Oh, you can.
You can?
No. You really shouldn't. But yeah, back to Peter. Like, so this is a huge achievement, like an amazing world record, first person to ever get to 10,000. And, but it's like soon after he made that announcement, another guy called Jason Mann came out who no one had really ever heard of and basically said that he'd almost seen 10,000. So Peter's made his announcement. Peter's known globally as a great bird. And then this other guy, Jason Mann, was like, actually, I've almost seen 10,000 as well.
Right? Oh, actually, him. Okay.
Right.
Interesting.
So, I have no idea what I've fucking written here. but by all accounts, it looks like Jason was scrambling to get to 10K, right? In those last few months, he was like, I'm going to beat Peter to get to 10K and started like traveling a heap, started logging a lot more birds. But in February 9th of this year, Peter posted online that he had reached 10,000 birds with the orange-tufted titmouse. Stop the podcast really quickly. It's Caesar here. Yes, the guy you're listening to on the real podcast. Just here quickly to say it was not an orange-tufted titmouse because that bird does not exist. It was, of course, a orange-tufted spider hunter, which is, of course, a real bird. And anyway, I've left all this in because we made lots of jokes and they were funny regardless of whether or not the bird exists or not. There is, of course, a bird called a tufted titmouse. So really, all the jokes sort of make sense anyway. So anyway, okay, sorry. So on with the podcast. Let's go. So he finally was the first. Yeah.
Titmouse. That sounds like something my brothers would call me as an insult.
That's a good one, actually. I'm going to use that.
Titmouse.
Titmouse. Mouse tits. Like, no, okay. Titmouse, that's fine. But that was huge news, right?
Yeah.
Front page stuff. This guy had finally broken the... I'm sure you'd heard of that. I'm sure it was all over your feed.
I've been losing my mind over it.
Yeah. So you would have known that shortly after that, this dude, Jason Mann, said that he'd also seen 10K, but actually he'd seen it before Peter. So he's like, actually, I saw it yesterday.
This is so girl. I've actually dated him before years. I've actually already done it, yeah.
Anyway, birders, as they do, started digging, right? So they started looking into this guy's list. And on the list of 10K birds, there included the New Caledonian nightjar, which had not been seen since 1939. The Manipur bush quail, only one suspected sighting since 1932. And the Zapata rail, unbelievably rare and largely inaccessible due to environment. So probably most of his birds that he saw on the list were fake. The weird thing is, no one actually knows that this guy exists. He might be just AI or something. Like, they, no one, yeah. No one knows this guy. He just kind of popped up.
Interesting.
It's probably Dan.
I can neither confirm nor deny these allegations. So I think the thing that's so fascinating about this story is people who've been kind of in the know in the birding community, they've known about Peter and his chase for the 10,000th bird for quite a while. Like, he's been the leading lister in the world. Like, he's got the highest number of birds. He's been for a while.
Yeah.
Like Caesar said, like, Jason literally appeared out of nowhere. And I think the first sort of news about Jason Mann was he put his list up publicly on a website, and basically all of a sudden it was like, oh, there's another guy who's threatening Peter. Because Peter had this big plan. I think he was going to go and see, I think it was Tufted Puffin. Or
Tufted something.
Yeah, it was Tufted Puffin. That was his plan. He was going to go see it with family at the end of this year, and that was going to be his 10,000th bird. Like, he had this full plan of how he was going to do it.
Yeah.
Because he's, you know, obviously had a lot of people supporting him and following his journey for a while. He's been very public about, this is what I've seen, this is what I'm going for next. And so you have this guy, Jason, who just appears out of nowhere. And it kind of led Peter to panic a little bit and be like, okay, this guy might actually get there first. I can't really follow my plan, you know, to get my 10,000th bird at the end of 2024. I'm going to have to really push to get it sometime at the start. So, you know, this kind of all went down, this sort of rush to get to 10,000 birds. And the fact that it was like 2 days apart or a day apart, like these two guys both claiming to get this crazy number on that day, it was just, yeah, unheard of.
This is fun stuff, right?
No, I'm at the edge of my seat, you guys. Genuinely, that is so petty. Like, I don't believe Jason for a second,
yeah,
obviously. But also, I don't trust most men named Jason.
Just in general. You're Team Peter.
I am Team Peter. Yeah, absolutely.
Too. There is a thing about the letter J at the start of a name, which I'm sure, like, we'll probably go on to a few more of these characters, but just about everyone in the birding community whose name starts with J.
Are you fucking with me?
What?
Do you know that my real name starts with J?
Do you have a real name?
Yeah.
That explains a lot.
Yeah.
No, can you tell me after?
Yeah, podcast? I will. Yeah, okay. Well, I'm not going to dox myself.
I had no idea, but it does explain a lot of
that. Is it only first names or last names included as well?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I have to be careful because I might be calling out everyone here.
Yeah. Are you guys really warm? I'm so, like, I feel very warm.
I'm a little bit warm.
It might just be the proximity to Dan.
I think it's because, like, so for those of you who are listening and you can't see what's going on here, Caesar and I actually, like, we're kind of cuddling up, holding hands. Like, so it's a little bit, it's pretty intimate.
Yeah, at one point, I'm pretty sure our lips touched for the same punchline.
I saw it.
Have you heard of the term stringing? I don't know why I'm asking. I don't think you would have heard of it. Stringing, it's a birder term. So birders have their whole own language.
That's cool. Not in the context of birders. I know stringing in the context of, like, if you're stringing someone along.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What's that?
If you're stringing someone along, like, if somebody really likes you and they want to date you and you're kind of like, sure,
yeah,
not now, but that, like, they're still at your beck and call.
Okay, so in that context, this word would probably relate more to if you were making up that you had a boyfriend or a girlfriend.
Oh, my God, yeah, cool.
So it's like, oh, that person's stringing, like, they're making it up, and that's what stringing is in bird watching. So it's when you make up a bird sighting, which is effectively this Jason guy's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think like, you had a podcast with Sean Dooley, and he described stringing in that podcast that was, you know, everyone makes mistakes. Obviously, you don't go outside and go out, you know, seeing birds and get it right absolutely all the time.
Yeah.
But stringing is when you either deliberately fake a sighting, so it's like you make up that you've seen this rare bird because you just want to be able to claim it.
Yeah. It's hard to accidentally say that you have a mysterious girlfriend from New South Wales.
Yeah, she goes to another school.
Yeah,
exactly. But there are times stringing in birding can also be, you know, that you've made a mistake, But then when people kind of show you that, hey, like your photo isn't actually this bird, you still stick by it and you're like, no, I'm convinced that this is this bird.
Okay.
So it can kind of happen in a few contexts, but it's essentially when people refuse to accept that they haven't seen something.
Question.
Yes.
I think I'm wrong, but with a sighting, do you have to provide a photo or is it enough to be like, I, you know, traveled to Costa Rica, I saw it, I put it in my Excel spreadsheet. Is that enough?
Well, it depends on the purpose of your list. Right. So if you're like me, and I just list because I just do it for fun, I do it for myself. But if you're submitting those records to like a database or someone like, there's a website called eBird, which is like this global database, or iNaturalist, or what's another good one, Bird Data.
Yeah. So, good one. eBird definitely is the good one. Yeah.
There are factions. There's controversy.
There's observation.org is one that gets used in parts of Europe. There's a few different things. So different people around the world have different preferences.
But to answer your question, if you see something really, really rare and it's unlikely to be seen in that area, it's pretty good to back it up with a photo or some kind of evidence, or have multiple people witness it.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's
in case you were hoping to go out today. And
there's definitely like a, like birding runs on an honor system in that people tend to, if you're kind of involved in the birding community, you have birding friends, people will know about your reputation based on what you've claimed to have seen. People will trust you. But once you start doing stuff like this Jason Mann guy has done, where you're claiming birds that no one has seen in, you know, 80 years, people start to question it, and it becomes very obvious when people who are claiming these massive lists, if they're doing too much of this.
Hearing this out loud sounds real silly, doesn't it?
No. You have me in the palm of your hands. I'm here for it. I'm enraged.
Yeah, I know. How would people do? Why would people do you want to hear my favorite stringing story?
Yes.
This isn't from Australia. This is from Canada, but it's a subreddit called Hobby Drama. I don't know if you're on this. Drama. Yeah, it's like the drama that's happening in your hobby or in like your little community. It's awesome. It's definitely recommend going through it.
Okay.
But basically, a photo was posted back in late July 2019. To the American Birding Association's Rare Bird Alert Facebook group, claiming to have seen a wandering tattler in Quebec. Mm-hmm. Okay? I know what you're thinking. Like, wandering tattler in Quebec? Come on.
Right? Tag me next time. You know?
But they're a Pacific bird. Like, they occur here.
Oh,
And this would have been the first time it had ever been seen in Quebec. Okay. He did, however, have a photo. Right? So he had proof.
Yeah.
Surely. That's enough proof.
I don't know.
The way that I'm saying this might indicate that it wasn't.
Yeah.
Birders, as they do, did some digging, and the EXIF data on the photo that he'd posted to the Facebook group, they noticed that the date of the EXIF data was from late March. They also then found that – no, that's not his name. Let's just not name the person. They also found that this person had a list of birds that they'd seen in March on eBird in Hawaii, right? Mm-hmm. So among which was a wandering tattler.
Yeah.
So basically it turned out that this guy had uploaded a photo of a wandering tattler that he'd taken in Hawaii and then claimed that it was in Quebec in July.
That's so irresponsible.
Brutal. I know.
It's
he was banned from the Rare Bird Alert.
Really?
Yeah, he's been completely discredited. He like just can't go birding in like the Canadian bird watching scene anymore.
Fair enough, I think. But I think that's just disrespectful. I mean, that's clearly a tropical bird, is it not?
It's tropical. What would you say?
Yeah, they're pretty widespread, but it's more that they're Pacific Ocean. Like you know, they're found on the west side of the Americas, and they're found on sort of like you find them in Eastern Australia and things like that. So
I don't think it's impossible for a wandering tattler to turn up in Quebec, right? Oh, do you think it would be completely impossible considering some of the stuff that's turned up here?
I would never say something like that is impossible. I mean, you have all sorts of stuff like birds can hop on a boat and then the boat takes them somewhere else.
Yeah.
Like you can have all sorts of things
that
happen.
Shit happens.
Yeah.
But I would say it is, it's certainly a remarkable claim that needs.
Would you have ticked it?
if I'd seen it, hell yeah. Especially if I got a dodgy photo that no one could, you know, prove.
My favorite part of the story is that so shorebirds, so these are birds that sort of live in mud flats and along the shore.
Yeah.
They often have leg bands, and the leg bands are four letters and they refer to the name of the bird. So like wandering tattler, it would be the first two letters of both names.
Okay.
And it was W-A-T-A. So this event has been described as Watergate, which is pretty good.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Not bad.
This story honestly reminds me of so many, like, this type of stuff. It sounds like it should be, you know, it sounds a bit silly and like it wouldn't be a big problem. Like, it's a community of people who are just looking at birds, and that's a pretty innocent sounding hobby.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know what you thought before you came here, but it doesn't sound like it should be drama filled.
Well, I get really pissed off. I mean, I'm a teacher, so I'm such a rule follower, and I hate when people ruin things for everybody else. I'm like, yes, it is an innocent hobby, but like if everybody sticks to the rules, we can keep doing it, you know?
Yeah,
like
so
I love like a database, and I hate when people lie just to like compete with it. I'm like, no, this is not a competition. We're all here for the common cause of birds.
Yeah, exactly. And it actually does fuck up data.
Yeah.
Like it genuinely fucks up data. So yeah. It is like, even though it sounds silly and it's like kind of dumb, and obviously any drama in a small community is funny, like it can ruin science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that the part of the problem, like you mentioned that, you know, it's not a competition. The thing in birding is that often it becomes a competition. Like people will do. We've talked about it on the podcast before.
You're a terribly competitive birder.
I must ask.
I love competitive birding. Yes.
Sorry to get all gender politics, but is birding like male dominated or female dominated?
It's male dominated.
I knew.
Particularly the people who get really competitive. Mm. Most of them are male.
Yeah.
Older white men.
That said, the first birder to ever get to 8,000 species was a woman. So
Phoebe Stetsinger.
Yeah.
She went, I've described this on the podcast before, but it's kind of a hectic story because she got diagnosed with terminal cancer.
Oh.
And as a result, she's like, I'm just going to go bird watching for the rest of my life.
Oh my God.
And I'm pretty sure she went to remission and she was like, fine. And she got to eight, she like beat the world record. And then she was bird watching in Madagascar and her van rolled off a cliff and she died.
Oh my God.
I know, while bird watching.
I literally have goosebumps. That's crazy.
Yeah, I know. It's like a really hectic story.
Yeah.
To like come out of that diagnosis and to like to become like the world's best bird watcher and to do those achievements just to.
That's at least she died doing what she loved. Rolling.
Taking a bus ride.
I didn't mean it.
Yeah.
But that's, oh my God. That's, I think, like the universe's way of saying you've gotten too powerful.
I'm worried what the universe has to say about the name of my podcast. Every time I go birdwatching now, I'm like, this is it. Like, this is how I make the news. It's like host of Death by Birding falls off cliff while birdwatching.
Yeah. I mean, is it like Steve Irwin died? You know, stingray, he's doing what he loved. I think it's harassing
animals.
Yeah, I think it's appropriate.
I'm so sorry. Oh, no, I don't mean that.
I love, like, I've got one of the Death by Birding stickers on my car.
You're wearing a T-shirt.
I'm also wearing a T-shirt,
Can we get those merch?
Do you want to? I don't have any T-shirts left, but I've got stickers if you want some.
Yes, I want a sticker. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, but, like, having it on my car and, like, having Death by Birding kind of printed out everywhere. Sometimes I go out and I do something a bit sketchy in the bush and I'm like,
I get found in this T-shirt.
That's so funny.
If that ever happens, like if I ever do die birding, like can you please make a special episode for me?
No, but what I will do is as they're pulling the coffin out, I'll play the intro music.
Well,
welcome to Dan Terrington's funeral.
That's awesome.
There's a part of birding drama that a lot of people want us to talk about that I've actually been hesitant to discuss, but I think we're going to talk about it.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Of course.
You might get like, you know, rolled up in some controversy here.
Oh, good. Okay. No, I love that.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of the night parrot?
No.
Right. So the night parrot.
Over to you, Dan. Yeah.
So, you just left a gap.
I left a gap
and I was like, are you wanting me to? Yeah, so the night parrot is this really cool bird. It's basically, it's a smallish green parrot. And it lives in the deserts of Australia. Mm-hmm. So as the name suggests, it's actually active at night. So most parrots, as you probably know, all around Australia, they're out in the day, they go to sleep at night. But the night parrot spends the day inside of Spinifex in the desert. So it basically builds these little tunnels in the Spinifex mm-hmm. and sleeps there in the day to keep cool. And then as it gets to dusk, it starts calling, flies out, goes feeding in the floodplains, and then comes back to roost in the day again. But the thing about the night parrot that's so special and so iconic about it is that it was sort of a lost bird in Australia. In sort of the 1800s, like even into the very early 1900s, it was a common bird across inland Australia.
Yeah.
And then it kind of just disappeared. It stopped being seen mm-hmm. by the early 1900s, and there were kind of scattering of reports here and there. Like people would sort of claim a sighting or describe a bird that was they flushed from some Spinifex that kind of sounded a bit like a night parrot.
Yeah.
But no one really could confirm that these birds were around.
Yeah.
And then sort of even coming into the early 2000s, there was almost nothing. Like they were the holy grail of Australian birds. There's at the time only two birds that had never been photographed, and one of them was the night parrot.
Probably one of four extinct Australian bird species. Was it four at the time?
Yeah, so
paradise parrot.
It depends on what you count as Australia, as but there's paradise parrot, there's
coxswains,
which that's debatable. There's basically not very many bird species have actually gone extinct in Australia. The night parrot, funnily enough, it's sort of a myth. People talk about it as a bird that was thought extinct.
Yeah.
But the reality was they were finding feathers. They were finding every now and then they'd find a dead bird or evidence of night parrots. And so it's a bit different to like some of these other extinct or claimed extinct species.
It's Kate Middleton, everybody.
Yeah.
It's no one's seen her in 2 weeks.
Yeah. exactly the same.
Yeah.
So it was never really thought extinct. It's a bit of a myth that it was. But at the same time, because no one could ever find them and there was this huge area, it's like all of Central Australia to go looking for them in, no one really could find any sign of these birds, like being alive, breeding. Like it was like, where are these things? They've got to be out there. And so birders were just looking for them. People wanted to find them, but it's hard work.
Have you been out to that part of Australia, like Central Queensland?
No, never.
It's dry and sparse.
It's hot.
It's where you work, Dan.
Yeah, so I do a lot of research out in Western Queensland, and it is at times of the year, it is extremely like high 40s temperatures.
Ooh, yuck.
Sun beating down on you. It is not comfortable. Like flies everywhere. It's a rough environment.
It's like the classic place where people would die. They get
exactly,
lost.
Exactly.
Like,
it's
pretty harsh. But this brings us to, so that's the night parrot.
Yeah.
So it brings us to 2006, right? So 2006, a dead bird was found.
Yeah, Steve Irwin died in 2006.
Really? On my birthday.
You're kidding. No, wow.
It was a terrible birthday present.
Of course.
Yeah. Wow. 2006. I love that you just had that on like September 4th, 2006.
Steve Irwin's death is like, I believe, like my 9/11. Like I remember where I was, what I was doing.
Yeah.
I think it changed.
When the big man fell.
Yeah. I think it changed Queensland, Australia forever.
Yeah, it's true. Hey.
Yeah. I remember crying to my parents when Steve Irwin died.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a...
I went off to the bathroom and cried by myself like a real man.
I was like 9 years old.
Yeah. I was 9 years old, was I? 2006, yeah. Yeah.
Something like that.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, brings us to the Steve Irwin of birding.
Well, yeah, so 2006, right, dead bird.
Oh, yeah, let's go through that.
Dead bird was found in a fence in Diamantina National Park. So... way out in Western Queensland, super remote area. And essentially this bird had gotten caught in a fence flying at night and it died. And this guy working on Diamantina, checking the fences, he found the bird, picked it up and sort of, it was realized that this was a night parrot.
Wow.
The first one in like 100 years?
There had been, I forget, I think there had been one other dead bird, or I can't remember. There'd been something. We're but just it'd been quite shit a while. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it'd been quite a while since there was sort of confirmation. And this was really the first like confirmation in a long time that there were birds still in Western Queensland.
Yeah.
That if you just went looking, they'd be somewhere. You know, mm-hmm. they've got to be around.
So yeah, this kind of led to a lot of naturalists heading out into the bush trying to find these birds, and one of which was a man named John Young, right? Yeah. Who's this classic bushy, like he's not a scientist, he has no scientific background. He's very well respected in terms of his natural history knowledge and as being like a bushman. He has a big handlebar mustache.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's a bit of a character and was kind of notorious, right? He was already, at this point, like he was already notorious.
Yeah. He'd sort of been, I mean, he'd done egg collecting in the past, which is sort of, it was more of a thing when he was doing it, but it's sort of phased out now. But he'd also been involved in controversies where he'd sort of claimed species to exist and then people were like, I don't think this bird, you photoshopped that image. Like, it's not a real bird.
Yeah.
He'd done all this sort of stuff. So there was a little bit of controversy around this guy.
Yeah.
But he goes out and, you know, he's spending a lot of time out looking for these night parrots in sort of the area around Diamantina in Western Queensland near where this bird was found. And in 2013, there was a photo that got released by John Young of a live night parrot sitting on the ground. And it was the first photo of this species ever taken.
On the ground?
Yeah, so they spend a lot of their time feeding on the ground and they'll kind of scuttle around on the ground.
Yeah.
A lot of parrots do it, but because out in the desert there's also not really so many trees for them to perch up on, they don't ever really go up into trees. They go into the spinifex or they stay on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So this photo was just like mind-blowing for the birding community. It was like, yeah, we'll just show you the photo.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's like a little budgie.
Yeah.
Fat budgie.
Yeah, so like this photo was just like people at the time had been like, it was the dream for someone to find this bird.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know about like Tasmanian tigers or thylacines.
Yes.
But you could almost compare it to like if someone had just pulled out a photo of those and was like, "Hey, we've got this." Like it was the bird equivalent to that. Mm-hmm. It was just this missing bird that suddenly was like someone has photographed one.
Do you know John Young?
I've never met him.
Oh my god, he's still around.
We'll come to that in a bit.
Okay.
I've never met him. I have spoken to him quite a bit. And I've asked him to be on the podcast in the past. But my issue, I think, and as you'll learn, is that he's done other podcasts in the past. And I don't see the point of getting him on if he doesn't like, if I can't get him to answer the questions everyone wants, whereas I just don't think he would ever answer some of the. Yeah.
He's a gatekeeper?
I don't know if he'd be a gatekeeper.
Essentially, it will probably make more sense as we kind of continue.
Let's keep on going. Let's talk about this. I think this moustached large man who drives his Mustang through the middle of the desert. Like, he's a real character.
He does.
Yeah.
So funny. Oh, my God.
So, basically, he takes this photo and it's like, oh, my goodness, John Young has rediscovered the night parrot. It's like the biggest news in ornithology in, like, the last 100 years. Amazing. Like, just amazing stuff.
Hmm.
But then some stuff started coming out. Like, some details started coming out. It was like an egg. I remember.
Yeah, so he as a result of this, he got employed by one of the main sort of conservation groups in Australia. He was doing research for them. He was searching for night parrots in all sorts of other spots. He's since claimed to have found night parrots at something like 10 different sites, but every single one of these subsequent sites has been quite lacking in evidence, and some of that is because while he was doing this work, he claimed to have found the first night parrots in South Australia. And what they discovered after, looking at the recordings that he'd taken of these birds, that the recordings that had been taken in South Australia.
So just to cut in, call recordings. So the recordings of them singing.
Right.
So that's how he proved that they were in South Australia. He's like, look, I've recorded them singing in South Australia.
Yeah.
But in the time between him finding the bird in Queensland and claiming these birds in South Australia, more of these night parrots had been found in Western Australia and people were getting recordings of them there.
Yep.
And someone basically went and had a look at this, these recordings in South Australia and lined them up with the recordings taken in Western Australia and worked out that not only were the calls super similar to just one particular call from the Western Australian birds, but they lined up so perfectly that, like, the male and female bird calling to each other were, like, the same millisecond gap apart. They were the exact same call. It was the same recording. And so from this, it was sort of deduced that John Young had actually gone in and played fake recordings.
set up fake recordings
into a speaker.
Wow.
To then claim that the birds were in this area. So it was just this massive, like, oh, he's just completely faked this. And then on top of that, there was a photo of a nest that he'd taken, and the eggs in the nest, like, were...
They turned out to be paper mache. he just got real crafty and he just made a fake nest.
That is so boomer white guy to be like, I'll just set up a recording.
Yeah.
No one's going to know.
Yeah. But even, like, I mean, to have the audacity to create a fake nest and then make your own paper mache eggs is so funny to me. It's like, I'm pretty sure they'll know they're not real eggs.
Yeah, exactly. And like, so all of this stuff kind of, I think it was 2019, a lot of this stuff kind of came out, was like, hey, the company that he was working for essentially had to publicly say, we are retracting all of this guy's research under us because we just don't know if like, there's enough of it that is fake that we just don't know if any of it is even true.
So it, like, look, it gets worse. It gets a little worse.
You're joking.
So I can't remember what year, but there's an author called Penny Olson who's this, like, amazing natural history author. I've read one of her books on the paradise parrot. She then released a book on the night parrot.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, like, an amazing investigative journalist who specializes in natural history and is often doesn't pull punches, right?
Yeah.
So really good, really in-depth. But the reporter described her book as a stinging attack. Olson suggested the bird, which featured in Young's original photographs, was injured and had been staged for the photo shoot. Basically, she suggested that from the photo, it looked like he'd caught the bird, he'd trapped it, and then staged the photo to get that original photo.
Oh, my God. That is so cruel.
So not long after the publication of Olson's book, an uncropped version of Young's celebrated night parrot photo came to light. In the photo, you can see – this is, by the way, I'm reading from the reporter – you can see wire mesh in the background, leading to concerns that the bird might have been illegally captured,
oh,
as Olson had suggested.
Yeah.
So he's basically, and it's kind of weird. The thing that's odd to me is that here's this guy who's obviously an amazing naturalist, has rediscovered the night parrot.
Yeah.
But then for some reason has decided, you know, it's not good enough to have found this population. I'm going to trap them. I'm going to handle them, take photos of them in stage settings, and I'm going to make fake nests. It's like,
oh my God.
Why? Why?
Yeah.
Isn't the discovery good enough?
That's colonialism 101 for you. It's not enough.
It's so true.
They have to make it theirs.
It's so true.
Yeah. I think the thing that also makes it so fascinating is that throughout this whole process, John Young is very reluctant to own up to a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
So even when he's caught red-handed, you know, it's like people have the photo, you can see the mesh, you can see, you know, these eggs are completely fake. You can see all the evidence. And he kind of just avoids talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of his personal posts on Facebook would all be about how, you know, a lot of people are against him and but he's thankful for all his supporters, and, you know, he has a massive fan base of people who love him because of finding, like, taking the first photo of a night parrot.
He's also a great naturalist.
Yeah,
like, so, he genuinely knows a lot. But why?
Yeah, it's just all this sort of all this drama around it he really, like, avoids talking about, and he doesn't, you know, he doesn't want to speak up about it and explain his side. And I think a lot of people in the birding community really just want answers because it's like, why did you do this?
Yeah.
Why did you do most of the stuff you've done? Yeah.
What do you think? I've got some more to talk about, but from now, what's your impression?
Well, firstly, I just want to ask, I bookmarked this in my brain. Does every bird have a song?
Oh, most do have birds. Make a noise.
Okay.
Yeah. So when we're talking about birds, like the night parrot, my supervisor is going to get annoyed at me for getting this number wrong, but I think it's something like 7 or 8 different call types they now know of for the night parrot. And it seems like different individuals actually make slightly different call types.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, most birds will have a contact call, which is just a sound they make to basically tell other birds that they're in the area, you know, that they kind of, if you've got a flock of birds, they'll sort of make contact calls with each other.
Mm.
But then you often also have a song or a sort of a display call. It's like a call they do to attract a mate.
Yeah.
So you get birds that have different varieties of sounds.
Okay. And if the night parrot was like, you know, missing for so many years, like how can people decipher, how can people decipher what its sound was?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So did we have, I guess next question is, did we have records of what the night parrot would have sounded like, or was it simply like, well, that's not anything I've heard before?
Mm. Yeah, I'm not too sure actually if there were any known like descriptions of the call.
Can you do an impression?
No, I've got a recording on my...
we can cut this out. After this, we're going straight to Central Queensland. Dan's taking us. We're going...
Go, yeah, go.
That's the bird watching segment for this episode. I know you've got something at 1 o'clock today.
I have a
doctor's
appointment, yeah.
I feel like we didn't fully answer the about the call. Mm-hmm. They kind of have these little bell-like... kind of ding ding kind of calls.
Okay.
And
ding ding.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds like a boxing.
They make
a boxing
few different
match.
Calls. They also do this one croak call that I've heard it once and it sounded really fascinating. But yeah, they do a variety of different calls, and part of the reason why, like, they are actually one of those birds that they call every night consistently on dusk. So if you're in an area where they are, you can quite easily, like, confirm their presence.
Yep.
But they're also a really hard bird to look for because you've got such a huge amount of area where they could be.
Mm-hmm.
And people before, you know, the first recording started to be collected, people just didn't know what they were listening for. You know, you might have heard a night parrot, but you wouldn't necessarily have known that it was one. And then to actually see them was, you know, almost impossible.
Trap one.
Yeah, yeah. It's the only way.
Yeah, I'm curious as to why the person that first found the dead one, like, why aren't they more well recognized? Because that, I feel like that's the rediscovery.
Mm.
It's not the live, like, the first live photo is obviously incredible, but the rediscovery is the body of one caught in a fence, right?
Yeah, so I think it was Shorty who, and it's his nickname. I'm actually not sure what his full name is. It's just called Shorty. Mm. But he's just the guy who found them. And, yeah, it's fascinating because I'm reluctant to say that, like, John Young rediscovered night parrots because, yeah, it was Shorty, and you've also got this whole sort of the reality that there are a whole bunch of, you know, potential records leading up to John Young's photo. He is undoubtedly the first person to have photographed one.
Right.
And that is a claim, you know, that no one can take away from him.
Mm-hmm.
Even if that photo has controversy surrounding it.
Dubious circumstances. But to wrap this up, Meg, as of about October last year, John Young hasn't been heard or seen.
So how old is he?
He's probably in his 60s.
Oh, okay. He's older than that.
70s. He headed into the bush.
Yeah.
He likes trying to rediscover extinct birds.
Okay.
He just headed off into the bush, and I don't know if he's officially a missing person. I know some people think, oh, no, people that know him know where he is.
Mm.
And, like, even if he is lost, like, he's probably out there, like, eating lizards or something. Yeah. Just like
he seems the type.
Yeah.
It's quite, like, obviously it's, you know, for a lot of the people, they may be listeners of the podcast who are, you know, massive
good friends
fans,
with him. Yeah.
Friends,
like, and I'm not – I have nothing against – I actually – I would love to have John on. So hopefully he's well.
Yep.
And if he'd like to come on, I'd love to talk to him about this stuff and like clear some of the stuff up. But I respect him for his skills. I think that it's hard. It's murky waters. It's hard to know what's true on both sides as well. And he definitely has been discredited by certain people. And there have been, you know, public image executions or whatever you want to call it. Like people,
You're looking at the Wikipedia page just before this.
Oh, yeah.
And like the 2013 fine, the photo, like the confirmed photo of an iPad has like been removed.
It's been redacted from Wikipedia. It's like 2006, the dead one was found, and like 2016, someone, I don't know. Yeah, it was just really weird. It was like he's been completely removed from the history books.
Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, obviously like this whole, you know, new it's kind of not I mean it will be now after this podcast.
Yeah. But no one listens to this.
But yeah, the fact that he's missing is it's, you know, genuinely a concern and like, you know.
Yeah, I really hope that they because there are obviously a lot of other questions, and I also just hope that he's not hurt.
Yeah.
You know. Well, this is a weird territory to talk about.
Do you guys, when a birder has controversy or like has gone too far, do you say like, oh, he's flown too close to the sun?
The old Icarus birder.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's added to his Icarus list.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we don't say. Like, okay. Yeah.
That's all right.
We can now, though.
Yeah.
Thanks for that. I might start adopting that.
Yeah, so look, that's kind of all of the current birder draw. Well, there is more stuff.
There's plenty.
But I think in order to keep talking about this stuff, we'd need like multiple episodes. But I suppose I just wanted to also get your, like, what was your opinion on, or did you have an opinion on what bird watching or birders were before doing this? Like, did you have an image in mind of what you thought they were like?
Just based on Geraldine Hickey, I was like, lesbians. no, just people who like are committed to the thing that they like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you nailed it before, though, that like the classic typical image is just like old white dudes with disposable money.
Yes.
Love gatekeeping.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have any listeners after this episode.
Yeah, no, I mean, you will.
The thing about it is both of us, Caesar, ideally are going to become old white men at some point.
Currently the goal. We'll see what happens.
There might be a death by birding that stops that. Yeah. But at the moment, you know, that's the plan.
I think it's nicer. Like, my dad's not a birder, but I would say he, like, is the same breed as you guys. Like, my dad, like, he collects things and like he'll go out to like find things and then he'll keep them in his shed, and he's had things since like the 70s.
Awesome.
And when you ask him why, he's like, because I found it.
Because I like it.
Yeah, I like it. It's my thing. Like when I was 7, I was chewing gum and I put it behind my ear and then it got stuck in my hair, and then Dad had to cut it out, and he keeps that in a jar.
No way.
Yeah. He keeps it in a jar because of the time.
Wow.
And he's like, oh, I've just never seen someone get gum stuck in their hair before.
Oh, really? It wasn't even that it was you?
It wasn't, no.
It was just like, if it could have been anyone, probably would have kept the hair.
Yeah.
It was just a novel experience for him.
Yeah. But, like, Dad does have, like, an approximate knowledge of many things. Like, he still has I think they're called, like, the Wagner encyclopedias.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and so you'll just, like, ask him something about atoms and he'll just tell you.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. I also don't want to – I don't know. I'm trying, like, so hard to tiptoe.
Say it.
Well, no. Just like, say it. I think that most of our community is neurodivergent. Like, I think that this adds to, like – I think it really – benefits as well, like neurodivergent people, to have that sort of that hobby that they can focus, like we can focus on, and that we can get obsessed over.
Yeah.
But it also, it's nature, so it's nice.
I think I've heard this quote, everybody's looking for a church, but I like to say everybody's looking for a sports team. You know what I mean? Like every time like State of Origin is on and they're like, oh, Queensland or New South Wales or whatever, I get that heightened like when I – Like when the last season of Game of Thrones came out, I know it was awful, but I was just like, that was like all I could think about. Yeah, and yeah. like I was just, I had an extensive knowledge of like, you know, all the Westerosi families and stuff like that. And then like every Monday night when it would air, I would have like 17 people over my house and we would watch it. And then I just had this moment of like, this is my state of origin.
Yeah.
I think everybody needs something like that.
Yes, it's so true. Needs that obsession, like that yes. obsession that they can focus on.
Did you have an obsession before birding at all, Caesar? Or was that like the first thing you became?
I've just got so many obsessions. Yeah. But most, I think that most of my obsessions are nature related.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Like mushroom. I like fungi.
Oh, really?
I like frogs. I really like frogs.
You like frogs, yeah.
But birding's cool because it, like, you can really create a list. Yeah. There's like lists.
I like, as a kid, my parents will be able to tell you that, like, as a kid, I used to just write lists of animals down. Like, not even animals that I was seeing. Like, you know, I'd go to the zoo and I would write, like, lists of every animal I saw at the zoo or stuff like that. But, like, I used to just write lists of animals for the sake of having a list of animals.
Yeah.
That's so funny. We've mentioned Sean Dooley a couple of times on this episode, who's like one of the Australian birding rock stars. He's also was a comedy writer. So
right.
he wrote for Sean McAuliffe, for Hamish and Andy, for Full Frontal.
Yeah.
Wow.
He's like one of those like 90s comedy writers.
Yeah.
And I went birding with him recently and he keeps like a handwritten list of the birds we see. And then like as we're getting in the car, because I picked him up from the airport, he's like, oh, this is the sixth time I've come to Brisbane. I was like, he's even keeping a list of the places he's gone. It was like so funny. And I pointed out and I don't think he found it that funny. I was like, dude, you're always on.
Yeah.
This is the 700th burger I've eaten in the past 5 years.
I know people, like I know some birders who will remember like the date that they saw every bird that they've seen. Like they'll remember exactly what date it was to the like the day. Which is just like I don't remember like what I saw last week.
I'm like that with dates. I'm a dates person. My best friend from school is a psychologist, and she believes that I'm autistic. I guess up in the air.
You're gonna love bird watching.
But like I've always been such a dates person. Like I was catching up with a friend on the other day. It was the 4th of March, and I was talking to him, and he was saying something and I was like, oh, do you know we've known each other for 8 years and one day? Because we met – no, it was the 5th of March. And I was like, because we met on the 4th of March in Palm Beach at Sally's birthday party. And he was like, I don't know Sally. But I was like, no, we did. And, yeah, I remember everything. I remember, like, the date that I started comedy. And it wasn't even sentimental to me. I just remember dates.
Have you been birdwatching before?
No.
You've never been birdwatching?
The thing is, I think I would really like it. I just – have to sleep in.
Yeah, yeah, you're not a morning person.
Because
I did say that like birders really like mornings.
No, I'm everyone who knows me knows that I hate mornings.
Yeah.
I do it for the birds sometimes.
Yeah.
But like it's fairly often that I wake up way too late and I go birding anyway and it's like the midday heat and there's nothing around, but I'm like, I can't do mornings.
You said at the beginning though, Meg, you were like, I like birds. What does that mean?
I think I do like things that fly.
I hate emus.
I'm frightened of emus. Like the emu war is hilarious to me. No, I do like birds. I think like everyone, birds have just, and you know, especially people who've grown up in Queensland, I suppose, birds have always been, I don't know, there's like a sentimentality to them. Like, you know, in Redcliffe with the pelicans, like every memories I have from like, you know, driving up to Mount Glorious and like the bellbirds and like the house that I grew up in, there was, what are they called? Are they budgerigars? They're just a rainbow.
Rainbow lorikeets.
Yes, rainbow lorikeets. And I remember I named one, but my mom was like, it's a different one. It's not the same bird. But I named her Rosie and I could have sworn that that was like my bird. But mom was like, it's a different. We don't have like resident.
You might have.
I think we did.
They're pretty territorial, aren't they?
I've been swooped by a magpie.
Nice.
Yeah.
So all like the classic Australian
all
bird
the classics. Yeah. I've done a lot of research on magpies because I think that they're fascinating. Like I love the lore that like if you make friends with them, they won't swoop you. And I'm like, I swear a magpie wrote this.
Yeah.
Because the only time I've been swooped by a magpie.
How can we get cheese from all these people?
Yeah. The only time I've been swooped by a magpie is when I, like, it's always been a surprise. I was, like, walking home from school and then I'm like, holy shit. And I didn't even know that they were there.
Yeah.
I'm like, I wasn't even trying.
They were watching you, though.
They were just watching me, yeah.
Do you know that a study came out at the end of last year that magpies dislike bald men, that they're like more likely to attack bald men?
I thought that was because they love shiny things, and if you're bald, you're more likely.
I don't know what it is, why they just don't like bald men.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand.
Yeah.
They look like politicians.
Yeah, exactly. There was another cool magpie fact I heard recently. You must be full of magpie facts, come on.
I don't know, like,
because it's true that you can befriend magpies. It's true that if you, like, yeah, if you go through, like, a magpie won't attack the local community. They'll only attack people, like, riding through.
See, I know that, but I'm like, I can't become friends with something that's attacked me.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? I'm like, when they swoop me, I'm you know, my guards are up.
Yeah.
My boundaries have been crossed.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, how can we rebuild this?
Yeah.
That's the only time I interact with them.
Yeah, it's up to them at this point. It's like, you've attacked me. If you want to resolve this, I'm going to need an apology.
Yeah, literally. Like, throw me an olive branch.
Well, the thing is, they remember faces. So, like, when that magpie sees you again, it will remember that it's attacked you before. And so I guess it just depends on whether it thinks that was worth doing and, you know, or...
Yeah, they get a bad, like, they get a bad rap, I think, because ultimately I think it's only, like, a small number of them that swoop, and it's always the males, and...
I thought it was the mothers.
It's always the males, I think.
I've been swooped by males. Yeah.
How can you tell?
So... It depends where you are in Australia a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm from Victoria originally, and our magpies down there, they're called white-back magpies. They have the males sort of have this really white back, but the females have more of a greyish-coloured back.
Okay.
So you can really easily tell the difference.
I've been swooped by males. So,
yeah.
Where in Victoria are you from?
I'm from Melbourne originally, so eastern Melbourne, around Ferntree Gully area.
Yeah. Right. My family are from Bendigo.
Ah, cool. Yeah. I spent a lot of time birding around Bendigo.
I can imagine. I hate that place.
Good birds, though?
Yeah, great birds. Yeah. Great birds. I saw my first Australian painted snipe not far from Bendigo.
There you go. So.
Wow.
Which I'm sure means a lot to you. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I know Meg has to head off pretty soon.
Yes.
It would be, you know, if we've got 5 minutes or something, I'd love to show you some birds. If
yeah.
We've got time. Otherwise, we definitely have to come back up.
We have time.
We've got time. Otherwise, like, what was your I know this is a weird way to introduce someone to the bird watching community. Be like, oh, I'm going to introduce you to birding. Now, here's the grossest shit that happens in this community.
Yeah. So what's the question?
I guess, like, what do you think of us?
I think it's cool. I love this. One of my good friends, I don't know if you know him, his name's Duncan Turner, and he is an ecologist. And, like, there's been times where I've been in the car with him and his wife will be driving, and then he'll just gasp, and his wife will think, like, oh, my God, she's hit something. And he's like, and he'll point out it's a bird that he hasn't seen before. Yeah. I love passion.
Yeah. Well, I think you're going to love birding. So let's do some bird watching.
Okay.
We'll do it really quickly. We'll try and get some cool birds. We did see a grey goshawk this morning, which was really cool.
Yeah.
Flying over. So, but otherwise, thank you so much.
Been an honor.
How do you, we'll go with Meg first. How do people find you if they want to find you online?
I'm mainly on Instagram. I haven't worked out. I'm going to get my manager to make me a website.
Yeah.
But I'm just, Meg Jaeger on Instagram, at Meg Jaeger, MEGJAGER.
And if people want to see a stand-up?
Just go on Instagram.
Yeah.
I'll post about it, or it will be, like, in my tagged photos.
Yeah, nice. All right, and Dan, how do people find you?
So I'm probably Instagram's easiest. So I am Danilboys on Instagram, which is a name I've had since I was, like, 9 years old, so don't judge me. But that's Danilboyz.
Yep. Avian influencer.
I don't know what you're talking about. That's nothing to do with me, but if you do like birding drama and memes and my friend Dimmy Tobbles, he has an account, Avian influencer, so that's avian.influencer. Not me.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
And everyone knows how to find me on Caesar_on_safari or death_by_birding. Almost forgot the name of my podcast. I'm doing great this morning, guys. I'm doing really well. I've had a great week, okay? And I've had a lot of sleep. So you can stop the accusations. But thanks, everyone, for listening. And thank you both so much for coming on today. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you. And congrats on 1 year of podcast.
Yes, thank you.
Oh, my God, congratulations.
The first and last year.
Yeah. Especially when it's like now that I'm on the podcast.
Yeah.
it's all downhill from here.
John Young will somehow find a postbox in the middle of the desert and send me a cease and desist. He's very litigious.
It wouldn't be the first time I've got a cease and desist for birding.
We'll talk about that on the next episode. All right, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye.